Good afternoon and good evening, and welcome to our final class in this series on Spandakarikas. It's kind of amazing that we are so close to what appears to be the end of this six-week class, but what I want to say is that, first of all, there never is an end, and secondly, that even though this is the last talk in the series, we will continue to meet. We'll have homework. The listserv will be continue to be open. And I'm also considering, and we'll let you know in the next day or so on the listserv, having a session next week of Q&A, so that those of you who have questions and things you'd like to share about your practice during this class will have an opportunity to do that. So we're going to chant and meditate and bring our awareness together in our contemplation of some of the remaining verses in the text. Obviously, we're not going to complete it. We're not going to go through every verse, but we are going to bring ourselves into the verses, the remaining verses, which I believe are really crucial to take home with us, so to speak. And then let's just begin by feeling for a moment the presence of all of us who are here on this call, tuning into the shared vortex, the space of awareness that's created in the conjunction of our presence here together. That shared consciousness is really not only created by our individual and collective intention to be present, but also with the deep intention of Spanda Shakti to awaken to herself as you and me, which is really constellated in this practice that we're doing together. And we can feel into that whether we are here live on Wednesday evening, October 19th, or whether we are here, whether we're listening into the call next week or tomorrow. So just feel really deeply as you can in this moment, how it is the presence, the energy, the strength of Spanda, whose intention is to carry us further along the inner path, and eventually to make what may at this moment seem hidden reveal itself as obvious. There's a beautiful verse by a sage named Maheshwarananda, which says, through the speech of the master, that which is more hidden than the hidden becomes more obvious than the obvious. And that is exactly what this text is all about. It is the speech of the master. The master Vasugupta, who was the discoverer of the Shiva Sutras, the core text of this tradition, and the speech of Kalata, the great master who was Vasugupta's disciple and who revealed these verses, the Spandakarikas, as a way of deepening the understanding of the original text by allowing us to tune in to the divine feminine aspect of reality, the Spanda, the divine throb, the vibration, which is at the heart of everything. Let's chant, and then we'll meditate, and then we'll turn into verses 33, 44, and 48, which are the verses that we're going to be practicing with today. So you can find a posture, find your chant sheet if needed. We'll begin by chanting Om Aim Hrim Klim 5 times, and then we'll chant the first verse of the Spandakarikas 3 times, praising that Shankara who is the source of the power of the Shaktis, by whose expansion and contraction this universe is absorbed and comes into being. So a deep breath in, exhale. Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundaye Viche Swaha. Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamunda. Daye Viche Swaha. Om Aim Rim Krim Chamundaye Viche Swaha. Om Aim Rim Krim Chamundaye Viche Swaha. And now the verse. Yasyorme shani me shabhyam jagata pralayo dayau tam shakti chakra vibhava prabhavam shankaram stumaha. Yasyorme shani me shabhyam jagata pralayo dayau tam shakti chakra vibhava prabhavam shankaram stumaha. Yasyorme shani me shabhyam jagata pralayo dayau tam shakti chakra vibhava prabhavam shankaram stumaha. And allowing your posture to arrange itself in a comfortable and upright way, allowing yourself to begin to experience the breath being drawn in and exhaled by the subtle movement, the subtle grace of the Spanda Shakti, really feeling as though the breath can flow in through every pore. Feeling the breath flow in through the front of the body and out. Feeling the breath flow in through the back of the body. Feeling the breath flow in through the right side of the body, flowing in and out through the pores of the right side of the body. Feeling the prana shakti flowing in through the left side of the body. Sense now that the breath flows in through the crown of the head and flows out through the crown of the head. And feel that the breath flows in through the soles of the feet and flows out through the soles of the feet. Now see if you can just open your awareness and feel that the prana shakti, the breath, the vital force that gives life, that exists as the life within your body and as the life that flows throughout the universe, that it's flowing in through every pore, from the front, from the back, from each side, from above and below. See if you can allow yourself to feel how breathing flows through the entire surface of this breathing body. Gently and soulfully opening your edges to the recognition of what it is that's living through us and as us. The vital force within all that is, within every atom and molecule. Let yourself be breathed by her. We're going to return to meditation quite a few times in the course of this evening. And as you listen to me and to others who will be sharing at different points, let's see if we can be present to the space between the words, to the silence that is here between the words. Because one of the really fundamental practices that the tantras hold is the recognition that that expansive awareness called Spanda, whose nature is non-dual, which is present in everything, can actually be found in the space between. The space between one breath and another, between one word and another, between one thought and another. Like everybody, I've been really loving the listserv and the wisdom and the openness and the freedom that has been expressed on it. And I really enjoy reading some of the emails about the obstacles that we experience, because that experience of obstacle, so to speak, is actually one of the ways in which we get humbled by the attempt that the mind makes to enter into something that is beyond the mind. And it's something that we all do, that we all get humbled by, because part of the gift of Spanda, and especially of these non-dual teachings, is to actually humble the mind such that it can begin to realize that in order to experience what we're really longing for, it actually needs to melt. I once had a dream in which my teacher came to me and said, you know, if you don't melt, what is the point of my doing all this teaching? And it was a very profound dream for me, because it kind of took me to the heart of what all of this practice is about. It's not about doing it. It's not even about getting it. And, you know, I was in those days, and still am to some extent, pretty smart about intellectually grasping spiritual philosophy. It's about this very gentle melting of the borders, of the boundaries that keep us from recognizing what is at the core, what is at the heart. And though this process can happen in a fraction of a second, for most of us, it actually takes a while. And I was especially delighted by reading Marilyn's email last week about how she kept walking around squinting to try and see consciousness in the physical world around her. And I laugh, because I've done that same thing so many times, trying to see into the physical world, as if by sheer will I could make it reveal itself as no longer opaque and solid, but actually pulsing with consciousness. In other words, that I could use my mentally outward going vision to see behind solidity. And it never worked. At least it never worked for me. But what I discovered is there's something about that innocent effort to see through the solidity of reality that is part of our signaling to Shakti, signaling to Spanda, that we want to see this, that we want to get this, that we want to be able to have that vision. And so that intention and that particular form of effort and all the other efforts we make actually amounts to a veiled request to consciousness, to that presence, to reveal itself as the body, as the world. And yet every time I have had that vision, which always arises spontaneously, usually for me after a deep meditation, but sometimes, you know, just out of the blue, when the world reveals itself for a moment or an hour as an undulating mass of goddessness, or as just simply in its pulsing, interconnected beauty, in its lovingness, in its softness. And though we don't make this recognition happen because when we're operating in normal mental consciousness filled with perceptual and conceptual patterning, nonetheless, it does happen, because Shakti, as we cultivate this awareness, begins to, I would say, want to show us that everything is always arising and subsiding inside this loving field that is really the truth. So in the process of inquiring, of entering into the field of awareness, of looking into what it is that we are, some aspect of the opaqueness, the opacity, as I believe it's pronounced, I've never actually heard that word pronounced, I've only ever read it, something in that opaqueness, a net density begins to loosen. And we do start to begin to recognize that which is always present, even when the mind is thinking. And I just want to begin and end, but with a statement that is, you know, one of the great statements of Advaita Vedanta, of non-dual Vedanta, which is also a teaching of non-dual Shaivism, which is that because you exist, everything exists. Now, in Shaivism, when we say you, we're talking about that you which is not different than Shiva, that is not different from the vastness, but which we experience in the ordinary way as our own awareness. And what Advaita points out is that even though everything about you in the way you ordinarily experience as yourself changes, that is, the sense of existing, of being alive, has been present for you ever since you awakened the world. So if at this moment you would actually let go of everything that you think you are, everything that you know about yourself, everything that you remember about who Karen is, about who Marilyn is, about who Aaron is, and just ask yourself, okay, what am I without concepts and memories? You would indeed, and you may be now, fall into that felt sense of being, that felt sense of existing, that really is not different from the sense of existing that you had as an infant, even though you may not remember being an infant. You might actually recognize that behind all the ways that you presently define yourself, behind all the changes, there is just one experiencer, and that it has no name, no shape, no age. It's just a kind of suchness or thatness, as the texts of Advaita and Shaivism say, that exists and is aware of its existence. And on the one hand, this is so self-evident that to most of us, it isn't even interesting. I mean, yeah, duh, if you didn't exist, nothing else would exist for you because you wouldn't be here to know it. But in the Spanda tradition, in the tradition of Shaiva Tantra, where the intent is to find the absolute identity between your bare awareness and the great awareness, the great self-reflective awareness that's the source of everything, it is actually really significant to keep reminding yourself that our power to be aware is the meeting place of all experience. In my experience, this is not all you need to know for various reasons, which we're going to talk about later. You know, for most of us, there is actually quite a bit of practice and intention and, yes, purification. Most of us don't like that word, but actually it's pretty much what we do when we practice, is really allow consciousness to purify itself by letting go of the various schmutz that kind of veils what we really are. But the Spandakarakas does keep bringing us back again and again to the understanding that whatever strategies you may find useful for seeing into the truth of who you are, what you will always discover is that presence, awareness, consciousness, love, knowingness is the unchanging truth of you. And two, that everything in your moment-to-moment experience, from the subtlest thought that pops up in the seconds after you wake up from sleep, to the most profoundly physical experience, like breaking your leg or having an orgasm, that all of this, your entire experience, is made up of millions of impulses of spanda, of shakti, of tremoring, of vibrating energy, which are constantly arising and subsiding, held in that field of awareness that you can tune into when you're reminded of it, and which, though limited at most moments in your life, is nonetheless completely contained in and one with the vast awareness that we call Shiva. It's true that you'll have to undergo a shift in perspective in order to experience this, although some of you may be experiencing it right now, because that shift can happen in a second. And truly, there is no reason why it shouldn't happen sooner rather than later. There is no reason why we can't just allow ourselves to fold back into the recognition that that in us which knows our experience is not different than the vast consciousness that we call Godness, that our mind, though bounded, though filled with stuff, is actually not different than the divine mind. And even though it's obvious that we're not supposed to take this as a dogma, as a matter of belief, nonetheless, being willing to keep turning over this idea, turning back and making the effort to recognize what is always already present, is actually necessary in order for that revelation to become our experience in life. So we do need effort, but it has to be a certain kind of effort or a combination of certain efforts. And part of what I want to talk about tonight and practice with tonight is that the effort we make is going to be different depending on where we are in a given moment. Part of what the Spandakarikas and the whole tradition of self-recognition in Kashmir Shaivism is very skillful about pointing out to us is the fact that the strategies that we work with, the strategy we employ for waking up or for becoming attentive to presence, to divinity, to the self, is always going to depend on where we start, on how we are at a given moment. And so Shaivism, Tantra, actually gives us a variety of methods with the understanding that if we have a quiverful of methods and a basic understanding of what our state of awareness is at a given moment, that we'll be able to discern what in this moment is going to help us be present with presence or be able to enter the self or to be able to, as one of the great texts of Shaivism says, be able to find the center in our own consciousness and allow it to expand. And again, as we were saying last week, one of the keys to this is actually intention. I want to start by talking a little bit about verse 33. and then we're going to go to verses 44 and 48. All of these verses actually talk about the different ways that we can interpret the understanding of the center, of the core of consciousness, as we call it, as the you know, in Sanskrit, the term is madhya, which just means middle. Verse 33 says this: Shiva, the sustainer of this universe, when eagerly entreated with desire, accomplishes all the desires in the heart of the yogi who is awake after making the sun and the moon rise. This verse, Shiva, the sustainer of the universe, when eagerly entreated with desire, accomplishes all the desires in the heart of the yogi who is awake after making the sun and the moon rise. The key word in this, there are two key words actually in this verse. One is awake, of course. In other words, the one who is present, who's awake, who's alert, who's attentive, who is discerning. And the other is desire. And you might remember that we spoke last week a little bit about what it means to make the sun and the moon rise. The sun and the moon are esoteric terms, and they are used a lot in the Tantra. And they actually have different meanings depending on where we are in our understanding about ourselves. One of the things that this means, the sun and the moon rising, we discussed last week, it refers to the coming together of the prana and the apana, the in-breath and the out-breath in the central channel, the sushumna nadi, which in yogic lore runs up the center of the body, just in front of the spinal column, from the perineum at the base up through the crown. And actually, once you really enter into this center, you realize that it runs right down to the center of the earth and right up to the center of the solar system and beyond. But when the prana and apana, the sun and the moon, come together in the central channel, this inner channel opens, and when that happens, the center literally expands, and with it, there's an expansion of consciousness. A madhya vikasha, as it says in Sanskrit, in which the ordinarily limited awareness, which seems constricted and contracted and inside the body, can begin to recognize itself first as subtle and then as vast. So in yogic terms, as we talked about last week, the opening of the central channel, the expansion of the center, the rise of the sun and the moon, happens as the two breaths, the in-breath and the out-breath, the prana and apana, meet in the center. Secondly, the second meaning of sun and the moon in this context, which is a kind of a subtler recognition, the sun and the moon represent inner knowledge and activity. That is, inner knowledge being the awareness of Shakti, Spanda, as the source of everything. That is what inner knowledge is. It's, inner knowledge is the felt recognition that what is happening in your inner and outer world is arising from Shakti. And outer action, the experience that of your action activities, including breathing, including movement, including thinking, as being done by Shakti, by Spanda itself. So the rise of the sun and the moon at this very, very subtle level of awareness is the realization that whatever is going on in our lives, in our inner and outer lives, is not being done by our own intelligence or our own will or our own capacity. It's being done by Shakti, by the will of Shakti. And the third meaning of the rise in the sun and the moon, and I know there are probably many others, is the experience, the, so to speak, dual, non-dual experience that on the one hand is experienced as the meditative state in deep immersion in transcendental consciousness. That is the very profound meditative state that can arise when we sit. And the open-eyed state of recognizing that everything we hear and see and touch is permeated by the exquisite beauty and aliveness of that pure awareness that we experience in deep meditation. In some traditions, this is called transcendental consciousness and cosmic consciousness. Transcendental consciousness being the indrawn experience of meditation, cosmic consciousness being the open-eyed recognition that everything we see is permeated by the beauty that has risen in us. So that is another experience of the rising in the sun and of the sun and the moon. And the point that the commentator makes here is that these are all different states or experiences or practices in which our contracted consciousness is able to expand, is able to open. And one of the points that this verse makes, which is actually very important in the Tantra, is that when there is no doubt, no sense of separation from the Absolute, everything that we want and need in our life naturally gets fulfilled. So in daily life, this verse is pointing to the state that can actually allow us to experience life as a miracle, as a state of what is called a miracle. And I'm pointing this out because the tantras do really one of the characteristics of the tantras, as also of Christian mysticism, which it does have some things in common with, is that the ability to transform the exterior world through our connection to the divine is very much a part of the experience of awakening in Tantra. So when there is no sense of separation from the Absolute, when there is an experience of conviction, not just because we believe something, but because we're so in touch with the source of it, so identified with our expanded consciousness, that our desires are naturally aligned with the will of the divine and naturally create an external experience that corresponds to the beauty that we begin to experience inside. And when we're in that state of alignment, we can have a desire or a wish or a prayer, and we experience it becoming a reality just because we have it. And I know that many of you who've been practicing for a while have noticed this in your lives. It's not always true. It doesn't happen every time to most of us, because there are other factors that mediate between desire, wish, or thought and its fulfillment. But nonetheless, this is an awareness that gradually begins to come to us as we become more and more aligned with our own center, that, in fact, there is a genuine congruence between what we are able to want or desire when our hearts are pure, which is what the experience of the center really is. It's an experience of the pure heart. One of the names for the center for the Absolute in Tantra is the heart, meaning not only the center in the chest, but also the experience of the inside of the inside that is Shiva Shakti. And, of course, this recognition that when we're in touch with the heart, desires are fulfilled is the basis of the practical non-duality that's currently practiced in the New Thought movements in this country, and that creates a lot of confusion for people, because the way people normally understand this is that you can wish for something or want something and it will manifest. But that said, the form of affirmative prayer in which you, which is practiced in the New Thought movement, which people like Marianne Williamson and Michael Bernard Beckwith and others in this tradition practice and teach, is based on this recognition that when you really fully believe that you are not different from the great light of consciousness, and that the universe is not different from the great light of consciousness, that there is this fundamental omniscience and lovingness and power that is within you as well as within everything else, you can proclaim an affirmation or a prayer and it will happen. You know, I'm knowing that I'm one with that great light, I recognize that I am now completely healed of my infection. I'm totally healthy and happy, and there are no obstructions to that state. And in utter gratitude, I proclaim that I'm healed and healthy, that healing has already happened, that health has already happened, and so it is. It's already done. Thank you. You know, that recognition is actually a, you know, a practical example of verse 33. This is affirmative form. And in its true form, it is the state of somebody who is firmly established in their own heart, in the center, with the recognition that your own heart, your own awareness, is one with the heart of the cosmos. So in these moments, obstructions fall away, and seemingly impossible things happen. In my experience, successful prayer or successful affirmation actually depends on being in some sense centered in the heart, in the enlightened self, in the true self, so that your prayer or desire is arising in you from that place of connection. You know, as Ramakrishna used to say, I can't ask the mother for anything other than what she wants to give me. And yet, I find that the mother fulfills my desires. It's a kind of a paradox. So even if you're calling that the heart, the true being, as an other, as Ramakrishna did when he talked about the mother, or whether you call it Shiva or Jesus or Lakshmi, the truth is that the presence that answers prayers and fulfills desires is actually doing it from inside you. And that's what it means when the verse says, the desires of the yogi are fulfilled in that moment when the sun and the moon arise, that is when you're established in that center. It happens when you've entered into the connection point between your own heart center and what I call the great heart. And of course, what usually happens when you're in that experience is that you learn not to limit what is possible by creating a kind of a closed prayer. You make your prayers and desires open-ended so that they aren't limited by what you believe is possible. Verse 38, which also refers to the incredible power of Spanda that we tap into when we begin to practice with conviction. Verse 38 explains this further, and this verse actually has been for me one of the most important recognitions of my life, and hopefully it is one of the most important recognitions of yours. This is what the verse says. Laying hold of that strength, meaning the power of Spanda Shakti, even a weak man achieves his goal, and in the same way, a starving man can still his hunger. Laying hold of that strength, the power of Spanda, even a weak person achieves their goal. In the same way, a starving person can still their hunger. Now, aside from the miraculous stories that you can read in the accounts of, you know, the hagiography of saints in the many different traditions, this is actually a very practical recognition, because what this verse is saying is that when you're in touch with the power of Spanda, when you recognize that it is Spanda that actually sustains your life, then you can call on that power of consciousness, the power of Shakti, which is, after all, the power of the universe, to accomplish what needs to be accomplished, no matter what your physical or mental condition actually is, because it is Spanda that is actually carrying on your life. We block the Spanda, we block the action of Shakti with our belief that it's up to us. In other words, that it's our physical energy, our intelligence, our strength that sustains the body, or our food, or our breath. What this verse is saying is, in fact, that we are sustained by consciousness itself, which admittedly is working through our vehicle. In other words, it's unlikely that you're going to run the 3-minute mile in your current state of physical condition. But nonetheless, as you may know, when you need that strength, that superhuman strength, it can be summoned because it's in you. So, and we discover this, say, in meditation when the breath stops. But, and I know that many of you have had this experience, the breath stops, which is one of the signs that the sun and the moon have risen in the central channel, that the outgoing and incoming breaths have met and taken you into this, the inner state. And when the breath stops in meditation, if you don't panic, what you discover is that you're sustained, and you're sustained, you're not only sustained, but you're sustained in a deeper state of consciousness than you are when the breath is flowing. And of course, you do have to eventually take breaths and take food. But my point is that as you start to enter the inner realm in meditation and to contact your own awareness, to the point where you do begin to have the intimation that your awareness connects to the great awareness, you begin to have very concrete experiences of the power that can really create so-called impossible things in your life. I was just at an event where Michael Beckwith, the new thought minister and inspirational teacher, was talking, and he tells a story about in his early days, the early days on the spiritual path, when he was a very high-level marijuana dealer. He was, you know, he had a big marijuana business, which was, of course, illegal. And he'd also just begun to deeply read and practice non-dual teachings. And shortly after he began to feel established in his practice, he decided that he should stop dealing drugs. And almost simultaneously, he got busted for dealing, which, of course, meant that he was facing the possibility of a long period of incarceration. And he said that during the trial, he was sitting in court. He spent his time in court reading spiritual books, and he was deeply immersed in a meditative dharana reading this book when suddenly he heard his lawyer pop up more or less out of nowhere and in a state of inspiration pointed out a technicality in the arrest process, and the result was that the judge dismissed the charges against Michael. So he was able to continue with his spiritual life, not only free of the karma of being a drug dealer, apparently, but also free of that legal situation. And anyone who's ever been in that situation knows that that is a miracle. And I should say that I have had constant experiences over the last 40 years, my years of practice as a devotee of a teacher, then as a teacher myself, and as a writer, I've had innumerable experiences of being able to go into meditation, contact the Shakti, ask for help, and have being given the energy to carry out activities that I never would be able to do with my normal level of physical energy, you know, because I have, you know, more or less constant low-grade chronic fatigue, and yet everything that I need to get done or that needs to be done through this body and mind happens, is accomplished with energy and love. So I've actually learned to rely on it so completely that I often have to remind myself to pay attention to my body, because the Shakti can operate in a way that is so free of the body that it sometimes, you know, lands you in a state that's not necessarily so good for the body. But though for many years I believed that this process required an effort of will, an intention to make it happen, what I've come to see is that when you have a deeper faith in the process, as you become more and more deep in your conviction that consciousness really is doing your life, even though it happens in a way that your own ego can't necessarily fathom, it does begin to give you the experience that you, in many, many situations in life, that you're not the doer, and that what's most important in making effort is simply keeping attention on the awareness that presents itself in so many different ways in the course of the day. So as we continue, I'd like to ask you to just begin to approach this understanding, the understanding of what it is to tune in to the power of Spanda in the way of prayer. And I'd like to do it according to the way this verse reveals itself, by asking you to become present through the breath to the central channel. And I'd like to ask you to do it by allowing the inhalation to come in through the crown as though it were arising from space above the head, down to the heart. And then the exhalation to arise from the heart, up through the throat and the head, up to the space above the crown. See if you can allow the process of breath to settle into and be drawn into the central channel as the inhalation flows in from the crown to the heart, and then from the heart to the crown. Doing in this practice is inviting the two breaths, inhalation and exhalation, to begin to find the pathway of the central channel. And you don't want to try and force this to happen, because you couldn't if you wanted to. But simply to allow your attention to segue inward as you allow the breath to flow in through the crown down to the heart, to flow out from the heart up through the crown. let yourself settle into the path of the breath, flowing from the upper heart, which is the yogic name, one of the yogic names for the space above the crown, to the lower heart, behind the breastbone. And see if you can feel a moment of what I would call connecting. And what connecting is will be different for each of you, but essentially it's a moment of recognition of your own attention actually turning inside and connecting to that inner pathway. Whether it manifests as a connection to the heart center or to the region above the head or to the natural flow of the breath along the central panel, the central pathway in the inner body, or just a sense of relaxation or interiorization of your attention. And in that state of interiorization, of connection, ask for something that matters to you. Which might be asking for love to manifest in your life in a deeper way, or to wake up to the truth of your awareness, or for healing, or for anything that occurs to you in this moment. But ask for it from this place of connection. And even if you're invoking a deity, recognize that the one who answers the prayer is your own self. That is, even in invoking a deity, what you're actually invoking is the divine inner presence that is Shakti manifesting within you, within this center, which is your consciousness. Recognize also that you only have to make that request once. Because the divine intelligence that knows all that is present there in that space of the center. Just allow your awareness, your attention to flow in the inner path from the heart to the crown, or to rest in the heart or the space above the crown. So as the breath continues to move along the pathway or to rest in whatever way it is being drawn to resting, I'd like to suggest that if there's something that you noticed would like to share about that practice, or that you have a question about regarding the practice, you can press *2 to raise your hand.
We have someone from Vancouver.
Hi.
Hi there. Coco.
Hi. Hi.
Hi. Hi. I just had a question, Sally, about the breathing.
Yes.
With the vertical breathing, lately, I mentioned this to you a little bit on our last call, but I have found it's a little challenging. I start to get almost like my breath gets shallow when I'm doing the vertical breathing lately, and it didn't used to. And I'm not sure if there is a reason for that, where it starts to feel like I can't get enough oxygen, or if maybe there's a pranayama exercise I can do for it, or do you have any ideas about that?
My intuition, and I'm speaking from my own experience, is that normally when this happens, it's because of some degree of fear.
Oh.
And so it's not that it's not that you want to do a pranayama exercise. You want to adjust this practice such that there is enough breath. So, in other words, don't try to make the breath go all the way down to the heart or all the way up above the crown. Just have the intention to allow the breath to flow vertically. And, it will start, it's like you're, by relaxing through not, making a demand of yourself that it work out in a particular way.
Yeah.
The fear or the feeling that, for many of us when we're asked to do a kind of a specific practice like this, it brings up a feeling of not doing it right, which can be very subliminal. So the solution is always to relax, and often what it means to relax is to let go of the demand that you do it in exactly the way it's being described. So just have the intention for the breath to flow vertically and to begin to feel it coming in through the crown towards the heart, but not necessarily trying to hook your mind to the entire process of the breath such that you start to feel that you're not getting enough oxygen.
Yeah, today I actually noticed that I think my eyes are moving behind my eyelids as I do the vertical breathing. I think I'm trying to follow the breath with my eyes.
With your eyes, yeah. You're trying to your eyes are trying to move with the breath.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that a sign of just me putting in too much effort? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it is. When I was first starting spiritual practice, I was practicing the circular breath, where you breathe up the back body and down the front body and and try to circulate the breath, and I could never get enough breath, and it was very frustrating. And I happened to speak to a Tibetan teacher that I had visited, and I asked him about this problem, and he said, just forget who's breathing. Which I found, I know it's actually a really good prescription for doing a pranayama practice, because most of us have fear in the breath, for whatever reason, whether it's our journey down the birth canal or whatever. And the fear comes from the feeling that we're a separate person who has to breathe. So try that.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So
thank you so much, Sally.
You're so welcome, and thank you for asking that question, because I'm sure that there are others who have that same question.
Okay, we've got someone from Eugene, Oregon.
Okay.
Hi, Sally. It's Wendy.
Hi, Wendy.
So I don't know if I'll get to say it again, but I just want to say how deeply grateful I continue to be in your presence. So, it just expands in all kinds of surprising ways.
I am so grateful for yours.
Thanks. I feel like I've been pretty quiet during the class, but actually that's kind of a new place for me, is like just being able to witness and watch and not need to be seen.
Beautiful.
And
yeah,
it's really surprising to me, actually, because I've never known it my whole life. So, standing back, but I'm thinking a lot about what you're talking about tonight. And I have many, many experiences of that just surrender. It's kind of like surrender, but it's also fearless. Where you just know that it's not you that's doing any of this, and that it's just a channel thing. But then, and the points where I like lose that are definitely like where it starts to not work, and things aren't happening in the way my mind thought they were going to happen, or sometimes even it's like really adverse circumstances that maybe I kind of could have perceived, but just didn't listen to myself. and then it just gets ugly. And
yeah.
And so then it's like, what's that moment where it's just such a delicate line? And I just keep thinking about what you were talking about a couple of weeks ago about concealment and grace.
Yeah.
You know, that Shiva thing. So where is that space? It's like crossing over almost, you know, where
you
let go. But like,
yeah.
But then you have to act also.
Yeah.
And I don't have to look. And other times, no matter how hard I look, I can't find it.
Yeah, I know that is the exact experience of concealment. You know, you look, and sometimes you can't find it, and yet the very act of being willing to keep looking, especially if you can do it without over-efforting, you know, kind of
being attached to the result, right?
Being attached to the result. Yeah, it's that subtle effort, that subtle intention to recognize the truth about what is living your life. That is the essence of this practice, because we have to school ourselves to let her do it, because we're so wedded to our attachment to outcomes and our feeling that somehow we're responsible for it. So it's just learning to discern for yourself what is the right relationship of effort with surrender, and what subtle effort really feels like, as opposed to the panicky effort, you know, that we all know about. So you know that. You know what the subtle effort feels like. You know, what the confidence in the rightness of what is being unfolded feels like. So, your work is to remember that and return to it.
I know, but don't you think sometimes, like, there's this grace thing that
there's always
has to happen?
No,
but it's
exactly
like sometimes
right.
It's just like the more you want it to happen, it's like, no, wait, stop demanding or something. I don't know.
But looking for it is not the same thing as demanding.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for it is actually being alert to it. And we're actually going to talk about that in the next verse. So, yes, that's one of the paradoxes, to be able to intend to discern and yet not to demand or expect.
Anyway, thank you deeply.
You're so
in the
welcome.
Bottom of my heart. Thanks.
And thank you for that, for speaking that paradox, which is our paradox. So thank you, Wendy.
We have someone from New York, Colette.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Hi, Sally.
Hi, Colette.
This is all very new for me, and it couldn't have come at a better time in my life. I'm 59, and I'm going through probably the most difficult time in my life, both personally in relation to myself and as a mother of a young adult and professionally all at once. It's all in a swirl right now.
Mm.
And I obviously... connected with you and your work and this practice because I want it, and I have been sustaining it in a way that has surprised me. I think, in fact, because things have been so difficult and I've needed this so much, I've been able to go into it more than normally when things are flowing. Because the need is there, and also because you have facilitated a point of entry with extraordinary, just in a beautiful way. And again, not to be repetitive because this comes up so much, but I also am very grateful, and I love your work. And I thank you. for facilitating this. And what I'm noticing is very often after a meditation and mantra practice, I am buzzing, my whole body. It really does feel orgasmic from head to toe, buzzing, buzzing, buzzing. Just now when we did the heart, crown chakra to heart meditation, I found it very difficult to allow the energy to flow in through my crown chakra or even up to it. It all kind of stayed in my heart area. I have been mourning an enormous amount also, grieving an enormous amount. But I just wanted to say that what it felt like to me was, rather than a particular, again, point of entry or energy center being blocked, I felt like it was my own resistance. And I know that the resistance and fear kind of dovetail each other. But what is, I'd like to hear any response you might have to how to work with when you want something, but you want it so much that you actually resist it.
Yeah.
Block it. Because it's really not always fear. A lot of it is trying too hard.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So this is my suggestion. First of all, it's always really helpful to feel the energetic vibration of whatever it is that feels like a block. You know, and sometimes it's, you know, it's to feel it in a way that feels quite physical, even though it's energetic. So find that if it's in your heart. Be present to it. And then tell yourself that it's okay. That is, it's okay if there's a block. It's okay if it feels it's not moving. It's okay if there's too much effort. And just notice what happens to the experience of contraction when you tell yourself it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And as you do that, then you can start to actually practice with entering into the energy itself, with feeling the edges of it, you know, with doing what to me is a kind of a targeted, almost physical practice of feeling the sensation of the resistance or of the fear or whatever you call it. The name isn't so important, you know, that we tend to want to sort of figure out what it is, but it doesn't really matter. What it is an energy contraction. But that energy contraction actually contains a potential of expansion, because it's actually a very intense place of, you know, energies coming together.
Yeah.
So if you practice first by saying it's okay that it's like this, I can let this be okay, or even asking, can I let this be okay? So that it, you know, doesn't feel like you're forcing yourself to let it be okay.
Right.
And feeling that moment of release that will usually come, and then just feeling your way into the energy. It becomes your practice in this moment, and it's a very powerful spanda practice, actually.
So that is some of what you were describing when you talked about melting.
Exactly.
Yes?
Exactly.
Melting through the acceptance and through the allowing and through the
being
with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I find it very difficult sometimes when things are, like these days, I'm finding it very difficult to not be reactive to my own emotions.
Yeah.
I find it difficult to just allow them to be. And I also understand that is, again, my need to control them.
Yeah,
so I will practice this.
And you know, and let it be okay that you have this need to control your emotions, and that you're averse to certain emotions. You know, it's like we all have things about ourselves that we feel good about and that we allow, and things about ourselves that we're averse to, and that this practice of okay, can I let it be okay that I'm, you know, grieving or upset or angry.
All of the above.
All of the above, right?
Yeah.
Right. It's
helpless, frightened,
helpless,
angry,
frightened,
upset, resentful,
Yes. Can I let this be okay? Can I be present with it? Yeah. And in that moment of allowing, then you can practice being present to the energy, which is Spanda in that form. You know, and she'll start to show you how that's true.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Colette. Thank you so much for bringing this up.
Thank you.
And love and blessings.
We have, I think it's Christine.
Hi, Christine.
Hi, Sally. I'm going to just let you pass. I am actually fallen into the answer you just gave Colette. So,
oh, great. Okay.
I'll share on the listserv later.
Okay, perfect. Love to you. So thank you all. And I want to just talk about two verses that I find are kind of crucial to the practice of Spanda, which we sort of touched on in the question and answers. And they're verses 44 and 48. Verse 44 says, I'm paraphrasing a little for the sake of explanation, at all times the yogi should remain well awake, having, through perception, observed the field of objects. One should deposit everything in one place, that is, see everything as identical with Spanda, which is our own essential self. Thus, one is never troubled by the feeling of otherness. Now, this is a practice. It's also, of course, an attainment. That is, the capacity to remain alert and continually recognize that everything that we see or experience is Spanda, is identical with Spanda, which is identical with ourselves. It's not something that we're always able to do in that form. And yet, again, having that intention, having that continual question, how can I recognize what it is I'm experiencing as a manifestation of Spanda, of the vibrating Shakti? In what way is it appropriate for me to have that recognition now? That's the very heart of our practice. And I'm going to say something more about that in a moment. Verse 48, which is pretty much the sum up verse in the Spanda Karikas, which we actually discussed in the last class in the first course. Verse 48, which I put on my mirror. You know, it's like something to write on your wall. This, the power of Shiva, which is known as Spanda, residing in a bound soul, is the source of bondage. But when its true nature is understood and it's set on its own path, this power bestows the fruits of yoga. So when the true nature of Spanda, that is to say, the true nature of the force that creates our experience, is understood and it's set on its own path, this same power bestows the fruits of yoga. And I know you guys know, many of you, that this is the core understanding of Tantra, that it's the same Shakti, the same Spanda, that makes our mind and senses look outward, that creates the experience of separation. It's that same Spanda, that same Shakti, which when our intention is to recognize her for what she is, when the power that drives us in all the ways that we're driven is recognized as the power of God, really the power of the self, and we intend deeply to turn that power back on itself in self-reflection on its own path, this power becomes the force of liberation. And this is kind of where we started. The heart of this practice, the core of this practice, is the encouragement that really this text gives us to start to explore how we can find the vibration of Shakti in every part of our experience, with, as we were saying with Colette, as the throb inside emotions like anger and sadness and joy, and also as that which, you know, which pushes the senses outward. You know, you sit in meditation and your awareness is turned inside, but at the same time there is usually, you know, this throb in the center of consciousness, which is throwing up thoughts and images, some of them very beautiful and attractive, some of them really distracting and sometimes even weird. And to start to recognize that power is always active, and that there's a shift that happens when we start to have the intention to allow that power to become the engine that turns our consciousness inside. So when the text says one should remain awake and deposit everything in one place, what that means is that we can stay alert to the recognition of what it always is that's playing through our entire experience. And that's what it means to let it be okay that something is happening that is not necessarily pleasurable. That is, if you can say to yourself, okay, can I let it be okay that I feel sick or that I feel scattered or that I feel weird? That intention to let it be okay, even though in the next moment you will probably want to work with the practice to kind of change your state, which is, you know, completely an aspect of practice. Nonetheless, in saying, can I let this be okay, what you're doing is reminding yourself to stay open to the fact that it is Spanda that's doing all this, including giving you the power to ask yourself these pointed questions like, can I let this be okay? Or who is it that's experiencing sadness? Or what is it that knows I'm tired? But truly, the practices are just different ways of wearing down the veils that cloud our vision, such that we can recognize more and more often and eventually pretty much all the time how Spanda Shakti is in fact always present and revealing herself. And as we begin to have the intention to be aware that everything in our world is actually arising from her and subsiding back into her, what begins to happen is that we begin to feel this inner throb of energy that pulls us inward. And again, I know many of you have this experience. One of the reasons that we are asked to meditate for a certain amount of time every day or to sit at the same time every day, more or less, when we can, is because the habit of meditation actually starts to give us the capacity to feel that inner pull of Shakti that begins to make more and more tangible the inner desire to turn inwards towards the center. And it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to close our eyes. It can also mean that we're drawn towards recognizing the interconnectedness of the natural world or the consciousness that's present in the eyes of the person next to us. You know, there's so many ways to follow the pull of the Shakti, of the pull of consciousness. But for so many of us, and more deeply as time goes on, the experience of recognizing the true nature of Spanda and setting her on her own path is experienced as what the tradition calls an expansion of our consciousness, which again can happen in many different ways, but which will always eventually create a kind of opening of our perspective such that we have more and more recognitions of how my mind, my breath, my body actually is expanding, that is, becoming more inclusive, more open, more aware, if you will. And in that process, we start to recognize that consciousness expands naturally, you know, through the grace factor. Daniel Odier writes in his book on Spandakarikas about how at one point he became good enough at going into samadhi states, deep states of meditation, that he began to be able to create a samadhi state by remembering what samadhi felt like and kind of recreating it in his own awareness. And he told his teacher about that, and she said, you know, don't do that. Don't try to make samadhi happen. Let meditation arise on its own. And that's actually a really powerful thing to contemplate. That is, it is happening. The expansion of consciousness is happening. We don't have to make it happen. Because just by intending it to happen, just by recognizing or even having the intention to recognize Spanda as the source of our experience, she begins to be set on her own path. Yes, of course we do a practice. It's important to do a practice. But how that practice happens or how that practice reveals Spanda to us often arises not as an obvious result of the practice, but as a kind of spontaneous arising that we can recognize that the practice has triggered, so to speak, but which is not a cause and effect, in a cause and effect relationship with practice. Because the practice is simply a way to remind Shakti to set herself on the inward path. So one of the most important recognitions that I've received from my study of Tantra and my own practice is the recognition, which is very much an aspect of this tradition, is recognition that one practice, a single practice, is not necessarily appropriate for everyone all the time or for you all the time. You know, many teachers, especially traditional teachers, just basically give one practice, and the practice they usually give is the one that they happen to be doing, you know, when they experience the expansion of consciousness that set them most deeply on their own path. So, for example, Ramana Maharshi very famously gave one practice, inquire, who am I, which was the practice that gave him the experience of his first really deep awakening to the realization that his real self was separate from the body. And he and his followers, of whom there are many in the contemporary world of so-called non-dual practice, basically tell us that inquiry into the nature of the self is not only the ultimate practice, but the only one you need. And at another extreme, there are many teachers who give you a mantra, and tell you to repeat that constantly and offer you instructions about how to repeat it, but not too much else. And, you know, there are those who say that chanting is enough, or that service, karma yoga, is enough, or that just sitting for meditation with open awareness is enough. And this is not to denigrate those practices, which are all powerful, fabulous, extraordinary awakening practices. But the tantric teachers of Kashmir Shaivism had a much more nuanced understanding of practice. What they believed and what they experienced is that we practice in order to set the Shakti on her own path, in order to set the Spanda on an inner path, that it doesn't really matter how this is done, but it does matter because we must recognize that the practice that is effective for us at one moment may not necessarily be the practice that's effective for us at another. So the practice that so to speak, works for us at a given moment, or that tends to turn us towards the inward moving path of Shakti, has a lot to do with the state that we're in when we begin our practice. So, for example, if you're doing the practice that we did earlier and of vertical breathing, and you start to experience fear in the breath or a feeling of restriction in the breath, then at that moment, it might be appropriate for you to inquire into what is the energy within the block. In other words, it might be appropriate to adjust the practice in one way or another without giving up on the practice, but recognizing that your inner state at a given moment might require an adjustment in what it is that you're, so to speak, doing in order to encourage Spanda to move in the inner path. And because our state varies, because there are times when we're very open and awake and, you know, soft and melted, and there are times when we're feeling particularly contracted or in physical or emotional pain, what the tantric sages say is that it's very skillful to practice according to where we are at that given moment. And, of course, this is fairly obvious on a day-to-day basis. In other words, if your body's restless and you haven't moved all week, it might be very important to take a fast walk or practice yoga or dance before you try to sit for meditation, to sit in meditation. And if you're grieving a loss and filled with acute sorrow, attempting to bypass the feelings by asking, "Who am I really?" may not be your best strategy. It might be actually better to let yourself feel the feelings and then see if you can recognize the pulsation of Spanda at the heart of them. So, you know, in a certain sense, it's just practical to work with your state and your practice in the way that most fits at this moment. But that said, there's a meta level on which the tantric sages recognize something that has been very important for me. And that is to realize that it's not just about how your body and mind are feeling on a particular day, but it's more important to recognize which aspect of yourself you're identified with in a particular moment. In other words, if you're tightly identifying yourself as, you know, Shelley, a 45-year-old woman with two children and a background in chemistry, you're at one end of the spectrum of consciousness, that, you know, which is in Tantra is called the level of being fully identified as an individual, an embodied individual. At the other end of the spectrum is the experience you have when you fully understand, experience that you are consciousness, who happens to be living in Shelley's body. And in the middle, so to speak, are all the different permutations of the experience of being partly identified with your embodied historical self, partly identified with consciousness, and primarily identified with this the subtle energetic experience of your body and your inner world, your mind field, your energy body. And these three, you know, these three general experiences of being identified as an individual, identified as, let's call it the vastness of pure consciousness or pure awareness, and moving from moment to moment from one place to another by as you recognize, as you experience the energy of how you are in this moment. These three states of being are understood to call for different strategies, and in these, in the tradition, these strategies are called upayas, U-P-A-Y-A-S, which the word upaya comes from a verb that means to approach. So an upaya is a means of approaching spanda, approaching the truth of your connectedness to consciousness and to everything, as a way of restoring in this moment your ability to recognize your own light. So what they say when you're deeply identified with your personal embodied identity, with the physical body, etc., who is doing actions and thinking thoughts and really feeling that you're the doer of them, it's kind of hard to really believe that your thought-clogged mind is the same as the divine mind. So what we do, what we start out doing is using the body and the breath as the basis of your practice. This type of practice, which is actually called anava upaya, meaning the approach of someone who is identified with their individuality, would include hatha yoga, pranayama, tai chi, rituals, keeping the rules of religious practice. And especially in the Tantra, these practices, like the one we were doing earlier, where you hook your attention to the breath or to one of the centers in the body, the Sushumna Nadi or one of the chakras, and practice, or at least begin your practice, with the, you know, with a kind of specific attentiveness to breath and bodily centers. And this harnesses the fact of, you know, that you're identified with the body and takes it to a subtler level through the breath and through the recognition of the energy body. So in anava upaya practice, you let the breath and your sense of the body take you to the place where you begin to recognize the subtler reality that's acting through your physicality. When you're primarily identified with your mind, with your beliefs, with your opinions, with your thought processes, which I think is kind of the normal state for most contemporary people, you know, most of us are fairly centered in the mind and emotions. You know, those who've done a lot of body practice might have a deeper connectedness to your physicality, but many of us, and I'm certainly speaking for myself here, primarily identify with, you know, with the mind itself, and therefore with the beliefs that the mind tends to have about reality and about yourself. And the core practice at this particular, when you're in this particular state of, you know, kind of embeddedness in your mental and emotional world, is to start to recognize that the mind and emotions are actually energetically, are energetic states. This practice is called Shakta Upaya. Shakti, of Course meaning energy, and it's the method of working with the mind and energy body is also sometimes called jnana upaya, which means the method of knowing. And this is the process in which you look into the actual experience of the mind, what it, the actual felt sense of, let's say, mental creativity. And you work with the mind by transforming the concepts and beliefs you hold. So in other words, saying to yourself, my mind is Shakti, my thoughts are arising and subsiding from the field of Shakti, is a way of practicing Shakta Upaya, or the means that makes use of the mind. And a lot of the practices in the Spandakarikas, you'll recognize, are this kind of practice. Almost all the imaginative practices that we do, everything from affirmative prayer to taking inner journeys to yoga nidra practices, as it's often done these days, you know, where you take yourself to a jungle and then you take yourself to a beach and you start to feel that all of these are creations of your own imagination. These are all Shakta Upaya practices. And we're going to do one in a moment as a kind of way of ending our class today. The third way of practice, which is called Shambhavopaya, is what occurs when you actually spontaneously recognize awareness as your true nature. And Shambhavopaya, which literally means the path of Shiva or the path of the Absolute, is not so much a practice as an intent. So when there is the recognition or the experience of awareness as yourself, your effort is to try and stay in contact with it. And there's also a fourth upaya, which is called the anupaya, or the means of no means, where traditionally the teacher says to you, you are Shiva or you are that, and you instantly recognize it. There's no effort required. But what I would say is that for most of us, most of the time, our practice is, you know, kind of segues between the individual means where we practice with the breath and the body, and the Shakta Upaya method of really using the energy of mind to transform our inner state, either by a process of self-inquiry or self-questioning. The question of who am I really is a Shakta Upaya practice, or through the imagination, or through the practice of really opening up to the recognition of what it is that is behind the thoughts, what the thoughts are actually made of. And because this is one of my very favorite personal practices, I want to take a few moments to allow ourselves to tune into what it is, what that energy field really is, that is constantly making thoughts and feelings arise, that is constantly taking form as thoughts and feelings. And we're going to practice with our mantra that we have been practicing with throughout this class, the beautiful Shakta mantra, Om Aim Hrim Klim. And I want to ask you to find a posture and just allow yourself to feel these sacred words arising inside the mind. You can coordinate them with the breathing if that feels natural. It usually is for me. I generally start to. Bring the breath and the mantra into some sort of connection with each other when I practice with mantra. But even better at this moment would just be to allow those thoughts, those words to arise. The breath is going on in any way it does. But every now and then you just introduce the thought Om Aim Hrim Klim into your mind field, into your stream of consciousness. And just allow that thought to begin to become more and more present inside your own consciousness. And I'm going to suggest that for this moment you actually focus on it in a fairly attentive way. And now begin to sense what we sometimes call the felt sense of the mantra. Of the space that the mantra leaves inside your inner consciousness. So you allow the mantra to repeat itself inwardly, and then you focus on the space that the mantra syllables leave inside the mind. And you focus on that space for as long as it remains palpable, and when other thoughts start to arise, you come back to the mantra and you go through the process again very, very gently. Om Aim Hrim Klim, and then focus on that space that it leaves within the consciousness of the mind. If you can allow your attention to very gently, with no strain or forcing, start to tune in to that field, that space of the mind colored by the sacred syllables of the mantra. This is one of the ways we set the Shakti, the Spanda, on her own path, is by allowing that power within the mind to take the shape of sacred sound, of mantra, and then to begin to recognize how, as the mantra merges with the consciousness of what we call mind, one can become more and more deeply aware that that quivering, vibrating, throbbing energy that gives rise to thoughts and images, that literally throbs with creativity as your own mind, can begin to expand and reveal its loving, pulsing nature as Spanda Shakti. Through the intersection of the mantra and the consciousness of the one who repeats it. And even though thoughts, other thoughts may be arising, you can allow the extraordinary love power that's intrinsic in the mantra syllables to subtly permeate the consciousness of the mind, and then rest for moments in that space it leaves, in the aftertaste, the residue of the syllables. And allow the Spanda Shakti of liberation embedded in the mantra to carve its own subtle pathways inside your inner consciousness. And gradually return you to the loving spaciousness that is your true nature. Which manifests in that space where the mantra meets the field of the mind. Which manifests in the loving conjunction of breath and body. Which manifests in the awareness of pure awareness, holding everything as it arises and subsides, and which is always throbbing and pulsating and vibrating as the blissful power of Spanda Shakti. Who is radiantly living as every particle of yourself. Who is present even in the most contracted experience. Who is always waiting to be recognized, to be known, to be seen as you. As your truth, as your power.
as yourself. Thank you so much for everything you've given, for your practice, for your listening, for your interactions with each other and with the listserv, for the grace that you've given through the course of these 6 weeks together. You will be receiving another meditation and study assignment for the week to come. The listserv will be open for another few weeks. And we will be having a bonus Q&A session next Wednesday at 5 o'clock, just for an hour, which you can come to bringing your insights, your questions, and your sharing. So, with great love and great appreciation, I want to close by again reading these exquisite words of the Spanda Karikas. That Spanda, Shiva's power of action, which manifests as all of those thoughts and perceptions that create the experience of separation. When she is recognized as what she is and set on her own path through our intention and practice, she reveals herself as the power of liberation and bestows upon us the fruits of our practice. With so much love, such deep appreciation, I offer my salutations and say good night. Namaste. Namaste. Namaste to the divine self that we share, that ripples through every moment and second, every manifestation of our living experience. Good night.